I come to, and my brother was there, and he said, "What's wrong with your eyes?" I said, "I don't know."
Well, I think we're going to plan a trip. If you're...
He said, "Well, let me give it a try."
Just...
He spent the rest of that day and most of that night trying to find my brother Bill. Caught up with him about 6 o'clock the next morning, naked, singing on the windmill. He said he flew up there. I had to fly up and get him down. He's about half crazy. Very next day, we picked...
I can picture his face. I'm having a hard time pulling his name. He sings "The Streak" and...
Oh, no, you're thinking Ray Stevens.
Ray
no,
Stevens.
That wasn't Ray Stevens?
No, that was Jim Stafford. Before the show, we were talking about Branson, Missouri, and Jim Stafford's had a theater there for decades and all that. But
I don't like spiders and snakes.
Yeah, I could have sworn that was Stevens.
That ain't what it takes to live.
Well, we are in the Landscape and Gardening Hour. If you'd like to talk about your landscape or garden, 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE-4U. Mr. Harper, you'd mentioned earlier that this is one of the magic weeks, holidays for fertilizing citrus. And Bill and Gilbert texted in and wanted to know, can he also trim citrus right now?
We don't ever recommend trimming citrus. But if you have to, now's probably not the best time, because they're going to start blooming. You want to wait till... You either kind of want to do it in the fall or wait till they're done blooming, you know, here in a couple of months. Because then you know what... Citrus produce fruit on old wood, not new wood. And so if you trim off all your... You could end up trimming off all your blooming wood if you're not careful. And you just barely want to trim. You want to shape citrus. Just give them a little bit of shaping. We don't do heavy pruning because they're a bush, not a tree. So think of them that way. Think of how you would trim a bush. You would just give it some shaping. If you over-prune them, you will open... You risk the chance of opening up the canopy, getting sunburn on the main scaffold branches. You don't want to trim them up too high off the ground and have the trunk sunburn, because that's irreparable. That tree will just kind of go downhill steadily from there. So be very careful.
Now, I plan on doing a lot of trimming to my citrus this spring for two reasons. One, we had so much fruit last year. It was the first time I've actually seen branches break because I had so much fruit.
Wow, yeah.
But second, I've never, I've hardly touched them at all. And they're now about 7 years old, and I want to bring the canopy, the leaves, off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Not high, but you can't even get to the inner canopy because it's completely
okay
to the ground.
Well, sure.
I want to get a little space underneath.
My recommendation would be to do a little. Don't try and do too much at one time. It might take you a couple of years to get to where you want to get them.
Okay.
You know, just kind of work your way at it. But
baby
and
steps.
And if you do trim them up higher than you intended, then make sure you paint that trunk or wrap it or protect it so it doesn't get any sunburn contact.
And on that paint, there's a specific tree paint. You don't want to just get your typical...
Don't go in the storage room and get some, you know, semi-gloss interior latex stuff. No, you want to use a tree trunk paint. And in my opinion, the Go Natural, the stuff that doesn't... You put it on there and it looks just like the trunk of the tree, is the most appealing. I don't like, you know, white trunks out in my landscape, but that's, you know, that's personal.
And that... I don't know if they... Do you know if they still own it? The people that invented that are local here.
Chuck Robbins. I don't know. I assume that Chuck still does. But Mesa citrus farmer that developed that because his wife was so upset when she came home one day and the whole... They lived in the middle of their citrus orchard. So they had hundreds of citrus trees and they'd done all this landscaping and trimmed these trees up that were in the front yard of the house, and it was a sea of white tree trunks. And didn't like the look.
So they invented the Go Natural, which is a trunk-colored paint that's made to protect
from a distance. You cannot tell. You can tell if you get up close that, oh, yeah, I see it's a little bit different, but you can't tell they're painted.
Would that work on ficus trees too?
Absolutely. Ficus, ash. Any smooth-skinned type tree, it's great. Yeah, fruit trees, apricots, peaches, apples, those types of trees, it's awesome.
Yep. I haven't put any on our Red Push Pistache, but my other deciduous, the ash and the mulberries, I've painted all those.
Yeah, and the Red Push is probably okay. It gets a pretty good little barky tissue on it. But, yeah, definitely young ash trees, young mulberries, those types of trees would benefit from that. Pecans, for sure.
I've put it on our pecans as well. They're and I know some people aren't a big fan of it, but it is designed to be breathable, unlike other paints that are designed to be a skin protectant to,
right,
you know, the surface. This one is designed.
And consequently, because of the way they're designed, you do have to redo it, you know, ever so often. It won't last forever, which actually wouldn't be a good thing in this case. So, yeah. So
well,
kind of watch
it. As the tree grows and the
right.
trunks expand,
the
obviously
stuff
that
cracks
paint
and peels
doesn't.
And mm-hmm. yeah. So you want to make sure you redo it when needed.
Go natural paint. That's one of the things you could use. I know Eisenhower's a big fan of just wrapping it with burlap. That's another way you could protect your trunk. But whatever the case, that smooth skin trunk is very
just don't use
plastic.
If you're going to wrap with a breathable. Again, we're talking breathable. A cloth, a burlap, something that will let some air through.
We've talked about planting tomatoes now. We've talked about weeds. We've talked about protecting your soft bark, mm-hmm. bushes and shrubs with Go Natural. We haven't talked about winter lawns.
Okay.
How much longer can I expect my – I'm just looking at them like, should I fertilize? Should I not fertilize? Should I go ahead and let it die off?
No, it's a long ways. Well, I hope – gosh, let's hope it's a long ways from dying off, because that means it's going to get hot really early. It typically through April and into May, you know, the beginning of May, you know, and that's usually a good sign as to when to actually force it to die, because it, you know, winter lawns can go clear to July here if you keep feeding and watering them and babying them. So I usually look for that first 100-degree day, which hopefully doesn't occur until maybe June. But by Mother's Day, though, if we haven't gotten that, you want to start transitioning that lawn, you know, start mowing it short. But so, yes, to answer your question, we definitely want to fertilize winter lawns at least one more time before that starts to transition out. And let's hope it's not until at least May sometime before it gets hot.
And can I use the same fertilizer on that I've been using for the Bermuda during the winter?
Typically, yes. You know, if you're using a good wintertime fertilizer, I like slow-release fertilizers so that you just don't get huge spikes of growth and then they dissipate quickly. Of course, you know, organic fertilizers like Farm's Choice or, you know, chicken manure-based type products work really well, granular products. Good old Turf Royale has been around a long time. It's a good all-purpose tree, shrub, lawn fertilizer for year-round feeding. So a number of good options. But, you know, make sure you use them. I go into lots of garages and find lots of old antique bags of fertilizer that still have fertilizer in them. Those don't work so well if they're still in the bag somewhere.
Does it have a shelf life? I mean, as it just sits there? And
well, they get hard typically. The moisture out of the air, they'll absorb that ambient moisture, and this stuff will get like a big, it'll end up being like a big block of cement in that bag. Makes them kind of hard to use.
And you wouldn't want to put that kind of concentration around a plant.
you'd have to go in and chop it up and break it up and do some work to it. Yeah, you don't want to put big old clumps of that, especially on a lawn. You'd end up with a bunch of big dead spots in your lawn, for sure.
Yeah, I've got a couple bags like that now that you mention it. Water Use It Wisely reached out to us this week and wanted to know if they could come on and start talking about planting. Now, this is a great time of the year before the heat comes. If you're looking to add a tree or a shrub or convert your landscape, give them a few months to get established before we do mm-hmm. hit that 100-degree, triple-digit weather.
Absolutely. The earlier, the better. That's why fall is such a great time to plant trees, even desert-adapted trees. But it's a lot easier on you, too. I mean, it's cool out. It's easy to dig holes. You're not going to sweat so much, you know. Absolutely.
and getting a nice low water use, indigenous, you know, mesquite, Palo Verde, ironwood, to shade south and western exposures, you know, you're going to save a lot more on what that shade can do to your cooling costs on your home than you're going to spend watering it.
Absolutely. Of course, ironwood might take a while, but
we're not talking immediate return.
Okay. Your grandkids might enjoy the savings on the ironwood.
I planted the only ironwood I've ever planted. I went by and saw it a couple weeks ago. It's still not as tall as me, and that was 15 years ago.
Yeah.
That's why the mesquites and the Palo Verdes are popular.
Yeah, and they'll get there quick. So, yeah, and that's a good point, too, is make sure you know how big they're going to get, how quick they're going to get that big, so you can space them properly and don't get them too close to the house or too close to each other.
Not really Arizona native, but one tree that I absolutely love, and I've got a place on our property I'm going to put a small grove of them for a privacy screen, are the Texas ebony.
Mm-hmm. That's a really pretty dark green foliage. Ebony, as the name implies, it's a good descriptive name for it because they are that dark green, almost black color.
And where they are, it's not something tree-wise I need to shape and manicure a lot. Because
that's good because you don't want to be in there messing with them. If you need some security or a secure screening or a private screening, a home invader would be really sorry he picked your house if he had to go through one of those.
How's that song go? The rabbits wouldn't go?
Oh,
yeah. If you let it get low enough, not even the rabbits would go through.
Well, that was the song about the historical event you guys were talking about.
1912.
The Battle of New Orleans.
Yep.
Yeah.
Johnny Horton.
So that's what other trees? Because when you look at the Water Use It Wisely has a desert plant book, there's a lot more than the four I mentioned.
And most of those are not obviously quote unquote natives, and that's fine. They're desert or
low water adapted. Yeah.
So there's a bunch of acacias that are all great ones. There is probably nothing more drought tolerant than that doggone red push pistache, if that look will go with your landscape.
Mm.
It's fabulously low water adapted. Even the live oaks, very, very low water adapted trees. So the main ones are the different, and there's different cultivars of mesquites and Palo Verdes that obviously will grow, in little different forms. A sweet acacia, the shoestring acacia doesn't look anything like any of those. It's more of a weeping habit. So it depends on how much space or room you have. And again, I'm a big fan of pistaches and oaks and elms, even though they're not the classic desert-looking tree. They're very arid-adapted and will do just fine in our low-water landscape. So it depends on the look and the space that you have.